This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net.
What does it mean to be a born writer? Is such a thing even possible? I'd argue that even if it is, that allegedly born writer will have a number of interests and passions over the course of their life, and as anyone with a quantity of hobbies and responsibilities will tell you, it can be tough to know which passion one should follow most diligently at any given time. Well, today's guest has made the transitions from professional hockey player to writer to father, and his advice will help guide us through how we, like him, can make time for it all. Hey there, I'm author, writing coach, and RightsCast Network founder R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 65 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network. This episode's guest is Luke Murphy, the international best-selling author of Dead Man's Hand, Kiss and Tell, and Wildcard. Murphy played 6 years of professional hockey before retiring in 2006, and his sports column, Overtime, was nominated for the 2007 Best Sports Page in Quebec and won the award in 2009. Rockabye Baby, his latest release, is Murphy's fourth novel. It was really a treat to have the opportunity to discuss how Luke has skated through life's passions. I'm sure you'll find our conversation as elucidating as I did. With that in mind, let's get right into my interview of author Luke Murphy. Stay tuned after the episode for a glimpse at what we'll cover in our next episode of programming here on the RightsCast Network. Thanks for listening. Thank you so much, Luke Murphy, for joining me for this episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
Well, thank you for the invitation. This should be a fun experience for me.
Yeah, we like to keep it fun, and we're talking about something today that I think will be perfect because it's really about your experiences in navigating the different passions that you have had over the course of your life. And we'll start with this history of you as a professional hockey player. What is it that first led you to hockey?
Well, I think growing up in Canada, you basically don't have a choice, to be honest with you. I'm from a small town of about 1,200 people, so there's not a whole lot of opportunities in the winter of different options for kids to do. I mean, you have either hockey or figure skating in my town. There's no gymnastics or karate or music classes or anything else. It's, you know, those are your two options as a kid. It's either hockey or figure skating. So growing up in the 70s and 80s, this small town mentality really is, if you're a boy, you're playing hockey. If you're a girl, you're figure skating. That's what originally got me involved in it. But once I started, I mean, I just fell in love with the sport and I knew that's what I wanted to do.
Did you at any point in time while you were playing hockey, whether it was as, you know, a youth or even once you got into your professional years, was there any point in there where you thought you might end up becoming an international best-selling novelist at some point?
Never.
Never.
I never thought about writing. Even, you know, growing up in school, the only time I wrote was when my teachers made me, right? I mean, it was like, oh, man, I got to write. But I always was an avid reader. I mean, I loved reading. I always had a book on me, even on road trips and hockey. I'd be on the bus reading while the rest of the guys were playing cards or, you know, doing something else, watching movies. I always had a book with me. I just loved to escape reality. I loved reading fiction. It started as a kid with the Hardy Boys mysteries, and it just kind of went from there, blossoming there. Stephen King was the first novel I read, adult novel. I'm not sure what my parents were thinking, letting me read that, but, he got me into adults, and then I kind of got into the James Patterson cycle when he started his Alex Cross series. I always loved reading. So, being from a family of readers, my mother was a librarian, and, you know, both my sisters loved to read, and my father, and so I guess just being surrounded by books kind of put me onto that path, maybe, you know, now that I look back. At that point, I didn't see it. But now that I look back, I think, you know, my life was kind of directed into that passion because of my surroundings.
Do you think, too, you know, you mentioned that you could kind of escape reality when you got into your reading, and though writing wasn't on the table for you at the time, do you think that there is any sort of comparison that can be made between the escaping reality that comes with your enjoyment of books as a reader and the escaping reality that might come with, you know, losing yourself in a game of hockey, for example?
Yeah, maybe. I never really thought about that. That's a good question. Yeah, I guess when you're on the ice, you're only thinking of hockey, right? You're not thinking of things that are going on outside of your life. You know, if you have problems or any kind of financial or social life or anything like that, when you're in hockey, your total focus is on hockey, of scoring the goal, winning the game. And I guess writing's the same, and reading. So once you're in that, you kind of forget about everything else going around you. And it's, you know, it's fun to follow a character or pretend you're living another life inside that book. And that's a good point, Ryan. I never really thought about that. But yeah, I like that idea for sure.
Yeah, and the reason that I bring it up is because I like to play soccer. That is sort of my athletic outlet. I've never played at the same level that you have played hockey, but one thing that I have often found is that even if I only have one game a week, or if I go for a run, you know, on the days off to kind of keep my fitness up, I do find myself after that hour has passed over the course of playing or after I've taken my jog that I wasn't really thinking about anything at all during that amount of time. And I can kind of come to on the far side of that, so to speak, feeling just generally refreshed. There was that sort of quick escape of reality. Like you said, it could be social issues, financial issues. Sometimes for me, it's I'm toying with a particular plot knot in a work of fiction and I can't figure out how to untie it. But after not thinking about it or anything for a while, I can come back the next day or a couple days later and voila, it has been unknotted somehow. So that's really neat. I'm glad that you and I kind of have a similar experience when it comes to escaping reality, both through sport and through fiction.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned jogging because I'm a summer jogger. I hate it, but I know that I have to do it at my age to kind of stay in shape. Sometimes I'll get home from a jog and I'll tell my wife, I just thought of the ending for my book. Like, you're running and you're not kind of thinking of it, and then all of a sudden it'll come to you as you're running and you weren't even trying to think about it. But yeah, so that's, you know, you're trying to do something to stop, not think about it, but it comes to you. You never know when it's going to come to you. And I guess you're probably the same way as a writer.
Right. And, you know, speaking of never knowing when something is going to come to you, we've kind of discussed how at no point in your hockey playing journey did you think that you would become a writer. What was that moment, or when was that moment? What got you thinking that writing might be something worth exploring at some point?
It's kind of a funny situation. I mean, I'm sure it's never happened to anybody like this. I was playing hockey in Oklahoma at the time, and I got hit in the eye with a stick, and I was out for the whole season.
Wow.
So I was just, sitting, you know, at my apartment in Oklahoma. I didn't really know anybody except the hockey players. So they'd be gone on road trips. And, you know, so I really wasn't part of the team. I didn't do anything like that. So my wife at the time, she was my girlfriend, and she was attending university in Montreal. And she got an assignment. She had to write a short story for her English class. And she knew I loved to read. So she said, would you help me write this story? And so I thought about it, and I started thinking about characters and plot and setting and everything. And after we had finished that little short story, I had so much fun that I actually took one of the characters we had created, and I wrote a story with that character. I wrote, it was about an 80,000 word novel with that character. And at that point, it wasn't very good. It was, it was just a first-time writer, an amateur, just kind of writing what I felt. And I let my sister read it. I'm not sure why. Thinking back now, why did I ever let her read it? And she said, this isn't that bad. And she's pretty critical, and she loves to read. She said, you should consider, maybe publishing this. And I knew it wasn't ready, but I appreciated her words, and I thought kind of gave me confidence to start writing another book. And so that book that I had written the very first time back in 2000, I put it on the shelf, and I just published it in 2015, Kiss and Tell. I went back to it and revised most of it and took everything I had learned over the years and put it into it. And so it became 2015's release of Kiss and Tell. So it was a pretty cool story. My wife wants to take all the credit for it because of the short story I wrote with her at university. But yeah, so you know, that's a good thing for writers to learn is, you know, hang on to things. Like, no matter how bad you think it is, hang on to it, because you never know down the road where you want to go back to it and take another look after you've learned a lot of good lessons along the way.
And what I really like about that story, aside from what you just said there to really tie a nice bow on that, is this idea that you made the most out of a difficult situation, you know, being sidelined for an entire season in a state where you didn't have, you know, an immediate social network around you aside from the team, which, like you said, was often traveling for games, etc. You really were able to take something that could have, and surely did to some extent, have this adverse effect on your life and make it into something new. And in my own experience, I can actually, another similarity here in our writing journey, but with a different avenue, my big passion coming out of college was linguistics. I was very interested in the scientific side of language, and I had this idea in my head that, you know, after having graduated with this honors degree and studying, you know, the Romance languages intensely and intelligibility and all this jazz, I was going to go study psycholinguistics at MIT. Like, that was going to be my big jam. But first, I was going to take a year off so that I could go teach Spanish and English in Brazil. But when I arrived in Brazil, I found out the job that I thought I had didn't actually exist. And so I had this 3-month period where I was stranded in Brazil. And didn't quite know what to do at the time because I, you know, moving my ticket around, it was a really precarious situation, of course. But I decided, you know, instead of just spending my days drinking a ton of coffee and just walking around on with the greatest coffee buzz of my life, I would take the greatest coffee buzzes of my life and turn them into that novel I always wanted to write. And very much like you, the first novel I wrote, it was, to use like a hockey metaphor, it was like putting on the skates for the first time. You're doing what you can to make it work, but it's not very pretty, and it's certainly not hockey yet. That was my first manuscript. And then over time, you know, I realized, well, this might be something worth trying out too. So it seems like in both cases, we had these accidents, one maybe more, both happy in the end, but, you know, they had their adverse effects in the moment that kind of led us to transitioning from one passion to the next.
Right, yeah, right on. I mean, that's an amazing story too, going all the way over to Brazil and, you know, there must have been a point where it's like, oh my God, what am I going to do? This job isn't here. And then, like you said, you took the good and turned it into the bad and saw an opportunity and went with it. And that's, you know, that's this whole world right now is seizing opportunities, right? I mean, they don't come up all the time, so you have to really be ready and willing to take a leap of faith, basically, that, you know, it's going to work out.
Hey, did you know the RightsCast Network is listener-supported? That's right, listeners just like you choose to support our programming financially through contributions of $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month. In exchange for their support, RightsCast Network patrons can receive awesome rewards, including early, ad-free access to every episode of our programming, RightsCast Network swag, discounts on my editing services, shoutouts in our shows, and more. Not only that, but the contributions of RightsCast Network patrons have us painfully close to unlocking a fourth podcast every month. Sound like something you're interested in? Help us bring you more content every month by visiting patreon.com/rightscast and becoming a supporter today. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, sometimes it really does come down to that. And another thing that can be very tricky in this world of balancing different passions, and especially when you're trying to take one of them and make it, you know, part of how you can help sustain yourself and your family, not just creatively, but maybe financially at some point as well. I'm curious to know how you've balanced having these different passions in your life. And maybe I should start here. Since you retired from hockey in 2006, are you actively involved with hockey currently? Are you coaching or anything like that?
Yeah, I have three daughters, and I couldn't talk any of them into playing hockey, but they play ringette. My oldest one is heavy into the ringette. She plays on a traveling team, so she plays at a pretty high level, and I actually coach the team. So definitely in the summers, I coach their soccer teams. That's with children now, I'm constantly involved in sports still, whether it's coaching or reffing. I'm a high school teacher, so I teach a phys ed class, so I'm always around sports, and I'm so happy that my daughters do enjoy sports because they're involved in, you know, gymnastics and yoga and dance and ringette and all these cool things that I never had the opportunity to do what they do now. So I'm definitely busy. I ref hockey, men's hockey, twice a week in the winter, so I'm still around hockey. But yeah, I'm in the ringette coach now. I'm into the trying to take care of 13 and 14 year old girls, trying to organize them to play a good game of ringette.
Right, and it sounds like they are—they were very excited in the background there for a minute. So you clearly, you know, have your hands full. How is it that you find time between all of that sports and family life to write? How do you balance those passions?
Well, it's funny you use the word balance, because when I think of the word balance, I think, okay, 50% here, 50% right. there, but it's not even close.
Right.
It's in the winter time especially is crazy, because I teach. So I teach all day. I tutor students after school, then the whole evening is for family. So from 4:30 to 9 o'clock, it's, you know, running for sports or activities, suppers, homework, baths, all the father and husband stuff. And then after 9 o'clock, when people go to bed, I usually have some quiet time. Sometimes I'm so exhausted that, you know, it's just not worth it. So summers are very important to me when I'm off school. I try to write a full first draft in the 2 months I'm off in the summer, and then I spend all winters doing my editing. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. The last couple of summers have been very productive, which is good. But before that, I've only published 4 novels in 7 years. So, it's with so much other stuff going on. I know that when my kids are older, they'll be gone. They won't want to spend time with dad. I'll have more time, but I just got to try to get through these lean years and still keep my readers entertained a little bit while I can.
Yeah, and it seems like you are making that time, or as much time as you can anyway, at those the wee hours of the night, or as the night really starts to creep in. So I can definitely appreciate that as someone who tries to get that writing done in the morning before the day starts. So, you know, I'm up at sunrise making it happen, and you're doing it at sunset. It's all in what works for everybody, I suppose. So with all of this that you are confronting, this quote-unquote balance, even though it's not that 50-50 balance, have you ever found yourself doubting whether you could keep maintaining, you know, this writing career that you have along with all of these other things in your life that you love? And if so, what have you done to overcome that doubt?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm full of doubt all the time. Well, not all the time, but a lot of the time. It's when it's not going well, I sit back and think, you know, how can I do this? It's not going to work. Should I just wait until the girls are grown and I'd have more time? You know what keeps me going? Honestly, I know this is going to sound corny, but are the readers. But that's what really keeps me going. When I receive emails, when I see Amazon reviews, when I get social media messages or tagged in posts, readers talking about how much they loved it, especially in my hometown. Like I said, it's a small 1,200 people, but you know everybody, and you know you have a book launch, and the building is full of people. You walk down the street, and I went for a jog the other day, and there was a lady sitting out on her deck reading my book as jogging by. I mean, it was just like, that was so unbelievable. So I think certainly the readers keep me going. Like I said, that's kind of a corny answer. It's going to look like I'm, you know, playing to my readers and, you know, people who read books. But yeah, when times are going tough, and they go tough a lot, this summer, it was the first summer where I had all 3 girls at home with me. So my youngest, who's 6 now, and she needs attention all the time. It's like, you know, daddy this, daddy watch me do this, watch me do that. This summer it was tough to find time, certainly. But I know it's going to get better, and I keep that in my mind. I know that I'm going to have more time eventually, but I just want to make as much time as I can for my kids and family while they still want to be part of daddy, because my oldest is 11. She's getting to the teenage years soon, so I know I'm not going to see her much. She'll sleep till noon and want no part of me. So like I said, I'm try to balance it the best I can. My goal is to try to release one book every year. Maybe it'll start now, who knows. I've had 2 in the last 3 years, so that's I'm getting on a better pace now. So my goal eventually is a book a year while my kids are young, and then once they're grown, you know, who knows? It, as long as the ideas keep going and people still want to read my stuff, if there's still a want out there, then certainly I'll do my best to get work out to my readers.
Yeah, a lot of wisdom there. And I really think, you know, you shouldn't feel as though it's corny to feel like the readers really are giving you that fuel when you need it most. Because so much of, I think, what we do as writers has to come from the self. You know, it's something that I try to relay to my wife all the time is one of the great struggles is knowing that the only way anything gets done, whether it's updating your website, it's getting fresh words down, it's getting caught up on your email, it all comes from you, you know, unless we're in a position where we're hiring a publicist and someone to handle our marketing, etc. And for the vast majority of writers, that's never quite the position that we're in. You know, our royalties come in and we got to do what we can with them while they're available. So, you know, it really is neat to know that those readers can sometimes be the folks that we have that nice interaction with. You know, you get an email from a reader, you see a reader, you know, with your book on their porch as they're, you know, taking a look over every page. And those nice quiet moments can really suddenly make us realize, you know, we feel alone in this a lot, but we're not at the end of the day. Because once our books are out in the world, we're part of that great experience now. It was something that we can finally share all that work with other people. So as corny as it might sound, it really is the reality. So I'm glad you mentioned that.
Thank you.
A lot of wisdom from you over the course of this conversation so far, but now I am curious to know, do you have any final bits of wisdom that you can offer aspiring writers or other creatives based on your journey?
It's funny because once in a while I'll have a someone who wants to write a book or someone who wants to be a writer reach out and ask me, you know, what can I tell them? And I'm still learning as I go. I mean, my first book was published 7 years ago, and it's still, you know, my first three were traditionally published, and now I'm into the self-publishing, the indie market, and so I don't know if I can teach people. I'd like to tell them that, again, this is so just, you know, everyone probably says this, but just stick with it because you need to have patience. I started writing Dead Man's Hand in 2005, and it wasn't published till 2012. So it took 7 years for that first book to be published. And, you know, along the way, there were a lot of, oh my gosh, why am I bother doing this? You know, is it ever going to happen? All it takes is one yes. You know, thick skin is huge, especially if you're going to try to go the traditional route, if you're going to try to get an agent, try to get a publisher. It is crazy out there. I was fortunate to find a New York an agent in New York City. It didn't work out for me because I eventually was just a small fish for her. So that's why I kind of went the indie route. You have a lot of say on your own. You get to kind of keep track of everything, which is really nice. As for giving future writers or someone some advice, I mean, just stick with it. Try to write a little bit every day. Like I said, all this stuff has been said by lots of people over time. I don't have any secret. There's not really any, you know, secret wisdom out there. I remember reading once someone said there are three secrets to writing. Unfortunately, nobody knows what they are, but, you know, I don't really have any great wisdom. You know, even for someone like I never took any courses for writing. I never went to school for writing. I really was self-taught. I worked with some great editors. I worked with agents, and, you know, I learned a lot along the way. Editors are great. I mean, you know, I really recommend writers to work with an editor, you know, save up the money or just work with editors are great. That's all I can say. That I really recommend writers work with an editor sometime in their life. And they will really learn a lot because I know I learned a lot from the editors I work with. But sorry, Ryan, I don't really have any, you know, any wisdom or knowledge to pass along to people. I just, you know, stick with it and you never know what can happen.
Well, you know, you say you don't have that wisdom or knowledge to pass on to people, and it might sound like it's a broken record where, you know, this interview or others are concerned, but what I think that really just means is there are some truisms in all of this, and one of them is that perseverance is really important, and that's a lesson that I think we can't learn enough times. So thank you for reminding listeners of that. Thank you for reminding me of that. And thank you for embodying that in your own writing journey. And thank you, of course, for joining me here on the WritesCast Network for this episode of the R.R. Campbell WritesCast.
Well, as I said, thank you for the invitation. I was thrilled to be able to do this. And I was always told I had a face made for radio, but I think Skype works too.
Here we are, Skype, and it held up for us as well. So thanks again, Luke.
And so concludes my interview of author Luke Murphy. Thanks to Luke for joining me, and thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. I'd also like to thank the WritesCast Network's patrons for their financial support of our programming, which comes in the form of per-episode or per-month contributions at patreon.com/WritesCast. The WritesCast Network family of patrons gets some wonderful rewards in exchange for their support, including early ad-free access to every episode of our programming, discounts on my editing services, and WritesCast Network swag. And starting just last month, WritesCast Network patrons are entered in monthly raffles for critiques of their first five pages from me or Novel Approach's co-host, C.O. Nashleman. Sound like something you'd be into? The amazing Laura Hazen certainly is, and I owe her an additional tip of the cap for her support at $3 per episode. So whether you can chip in $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month, start contributing to the programming you value today by visiting patreon.com/WritesCast. That's patreon.com/WritesCast. Coming up next on the WritesCast Network is a Novel Approaches episode on the role exposition plays in our manuscripts. You can join me and Sion for that episode when it debuts on September 13th, 2019, or you can become a patron of our programming and start listening even before then. Until that episode debuts, however, you can find the WritesCast Network online at WritesCast.net or as WritesCast on Twitter. And I'm at rrcampbellwrites.com or at IamRRCampbell on Twitter. You can, of course, always email us at WritesCast@gmail.com as well. It's always great to hear from listeners, so please don't hesitate to reach out. That's all for now. Until next time, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Write on and write well.
This is the WritesCast Network at WritesCast.net.